Welcome to episode 121 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with their hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Hawkeye by Matt Fraction. And now, the cast begins.
And go.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another purple episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
And this week, we read Hawkeye, Volume 1, My Life is a Weapon. It's the first five issues from 2012, written by Matt Fraction with art by David Aja. It also had Young Avengers Presents number 6, but I couldn't find that one. Could you guys?
Considering I just borrowed yours, no.
yes, I couldn't. I wasn't not able to find it either. Yeah. But I looked it up, and it's from 2008, and it's kind of like a. It's not really an origin story, but it's like a introductory story to Kate Bishop.
Okay.
Where you kind of learn about her, who she is, and stuff. So I think it's more for people who pick up Hawkeye for the first time and have no idea who this girl Hawkeye is.
Yeah. So it's my bad that this trade isn't out for like another month.
Yeah, it comes out in March because I was like, oh, I'm going to get the trade.
Because it looks good.
And then I couldn't because it's not out yet, Andy.
Yeah, so we got single issues. That's fine, though. That's not a bad way to read comics.
No, that's fine.
But you know what? While we're talking about single issues, I just want to mention this because I know it's a lot of people have talked about it. And I noticed it last week. With Court of Owls, and this week again with Hawkeye, is fucking variant covers.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of these issues had like four or five different variant covers. Do you guys have an opinion on that? I don't know, like, one every once in a while kind of bugs me, but like five issues in a row, that's 20 different covers, it's like...
Well, sometimes what ends up happening is the variant is like for the second printing or something. I don't know. I know that there is a second printing cover for Hawkeye number one, but and it's very similar to the normal one. I think it has some small changes to it. As far as variants go, I think they're fine. I don't typically buy them. I have in the past, at a point in time where I thought I was collecting comics because they were some kind of investment, which is not the case for me, even though I put them in bags and boards. I do that just because I like, because it's, to me, it's easier to store.
Yes.
But I personally don't care for variants that much. Sometimes there's a really awesome one and I'll think, oh man, I'm gonna buy that and put it up on my wall, and then it ends up just sitting in my long box. But I typically won't. I won't ever buy sometimes there's like $30 variants. And to me, like, most of the time, they don't really mean anything. I think they sometimes they're really cool. Like, when Dynamite released Shadow last year,
uh-huh.
You know, the Shadow. Do you guys know the Shadow? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they did, like, 250 or 500 covers that were, or issues that were a blank cover, and Alex Ross had sketched a cover. And those were like selling for like hundreds of dollars. And you know, if you want to spend that kind of thing on them, that's cool. I think that that making those kinds of things available is really cool. Not that I would buy one, but those kind of variants I think are special. But the stuff that's just a different cover, I mean, sometimes they're really awesome, like I said. But in general, I don't see the value in those. But other than that, variants don't really bother me.
See, yeah, I don't know if it's because, I don't know, I'm not a collector. I don't think either one of you guys are really, like, collectors anymore. But I don't know, like, the thing that gets me is, take those Alex Ross covers, right? Those are cool. I do like that idea. But, like, when they go for a couple hundred dollars, who gets that couple hundred dollars? Is it, like, is it the local comic book shop, the brick and mortar, just jacking up the cover price? Or does it ship at, like, a $200, $300 price level?
That's a really good question.
You know, and I know, like, the Marvel and DC variants, if they're jacked up, it's by the retailer and not by DC or Marvel.
Well, it's funny, like, my local comic book shop has, I think they might have gotten two of those Alex Ross covers, and One of them is it's been up behind the counter since that issue came out, and obviously no one's buying it. And they have in their back issue section, they have a couple boxes that are just variant covers. So, you know, does that mean? I mean, I don't know which ones end up in the box, but obviously they're not like flying off the shelves.
I've noticed that too. Like sometimes I like to do kind of a comics run and get maybe like the past 3 issues at a time. And a lot of the time I go to my local comic book store and they have the variant cover. And I'm like, no way, I'm not paying an extra $3, $4, $5 for this cover when it doesn't feel particularly collectible considering that the normal one has sold out first. And I understand, like, you know, in a few years, yes, it will be more rare, but right now, it, like, as someone who's not a collector, it just seems like kind of not a good use of my money when it's obviously not the thing that's, like, rare at the moment. I know that's, like, not how one should look at collectibles, but it seems so silly.
No, and I think, Jen, you bring up the exact kind of problem that I have with variant covers. Like, there's a shop that I think we've all been to in the area on Winchester by a certain donut shop.
Yes.
Yep.
I don't want to call them out, but they will put up the variants for like $20, $30.
What?
$10, $15. They'll put it up there because they'll say, we only got 2 of them. We got 15 of the other ones. And when you go there, even if the regular is sold out and they've got the variants, like you say, a 3-month-old variant just sitting there, they won't alter the price. And it's like, I understand that the cover price might be $2 or $3 more. Fine. You know, as a printer, you have to pass the cost of a limited run on. I understand that. And you pass it through distribution and then it passes through your LCS. And I get that. $2 or $3. But $10, $15, $20, $30?
I don't, you know,
it's insane.
Like the shop that I frequent, sometimes they'll have variants that are like that too. And it's, and you know, I don't know who determines which variants cost more or, you know, but sometimes an issue will come out and it'll have like 4 variants and one variant will be like $1 more than the others. And, but then the rest will be, some other ones will be like $30, like you said. So who really knows? They're there for people who are into that kind of thing. And uh-huh. Obviously we're not the ones that those kinds of products are directed to. So, you know, we can just exercise our rights as buyers and not buy them.
Yeah, I just thought it was worth bringing up because we don't normally read stuff that's not in trade paperback yet. And after last week when I went and found the single issues, like they were 5-6 variants for some of them. And then this one, almost all 5 issues had at least 3 variants. And it's like, okay, what's the point of this? I need to figure out why this is happening.
Yeah, DC, I noticed DC has been churning out a lot of variants on their new 52 stuff. So.
And some of them are so small. And not, like the Hawkeye ones are minor too. There's one where the cover is Hawkeye drawing the bow. And it's got like this cool little design underlaid it and overlaid like zooming in on the knock and zooming in on where he's bracing it, you know.
Oh, I like that one, actually.
That's a good cover. And there's a variant where it just takes away the design, and it's just Hawkeye standing there. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is just before you give it to the colorist.
Yeah, you know, the Batman Odyssey a few months ago had variant covers that were the same thing. It's penciled. They had the penciled version and then, like, the inked and colored one. And it's like, you guys just scanned this midway through and you're calling it a variant cover.
Yes, and then asking $3 more for it.
Yeah.
That's my only concern. It just, it feels like a money grab for something that won't hold value even.
Well, here's, I mean, you know, this actually, this kind of leads to something else. I was in my shop last week buying my comics and there was two of the guys in there. One of them was the manager of the shop, and then there was another customer, and they were talking about, the manager was telling some story about how, like, 10 years ago, some person had come in and said, you know, you're in it, 5 years from now, your shop's going to be out of business because of digital comics. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about how that's going to eventually happen. And the customer who was in the store at the time actually made an interesting point. And that comics, even though sales are going down and prices are going up, the industry might stick around because comics are a novelty item.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a newspaper you know, nobody buys newspapers because they think that newspapers are an awesome medium, and, you know, because newspapers are going away, and that's, you know, that's a sign of the times and how everything's going digital. But, you know, there's comics with digital distribution now, and I don't see comics going completely digital, and if it stays novel like this, you know, the collectability factor might go up, and then these variants might keep, you know, end up being worth a lot of money, but who really knows, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can sit here and complain about it all day long, but if it is what brings money to the industry and keeps it alive, then I guess it's for the best.
I mean, someone's buying them, obviously.
Yes.
I can't imagine... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was gonna say, it's just... I don't think it's ever bad to give people choice. It's just... I don't know, not for
us, maybe. It's when you see it on the shelf for $15 that you get frustrated. Like, but cool, you know, issue number one is there, issue number two isn't, issue number three is there. Okay, I need issue number two. Where's the variant box? Oh, $15. Fuck this.
Well, like, you know, people have their favorite artists and stuff, and when their favorite artist does a cool cover for some comic, maybe that's the way it goes. Like, once, like I said, I don't typically buy variants, and once there was a month where Marvel was doing a bunch of Wolverine covers. I think it might have been when the Wolverine movie came out. And there was this really cool cover for a Hulk comic, but it was the Wolverine-themed month. And it was like a cave painting, and I thought it was fucking awesome, so I bought it. I don't remember how much I paid for it, but, you know, that's how they get us, right?
Yeah.
They give you something that looks awesome, and I used to be really bad about impulse buying. Maybe I still am.
I will admit the very first paper copy of Birds of Prey that I ever bought was one that had Bane riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
See, that seems awesome.
It was middle of the story. I never actually ended up reading that paper copy, but I just wanted to buy it because it's so fucking cool.
I've bought stuff for that reason too. Do you guys remember? I think we should get back on task, but let me just bring this up. Do you remember, Andy, I don't know if Jen, well, maybe both of you guys remember, but there was a time a while ago before the New 52 and before Flashpoint when DC did a bunch of white covers with, like, one character on the front and their, like, logo. Those were not variants, but I thought those were awesome. They were just how they printed the comics for that month or 2 months, however long it was, and I thought those were rad.
It was really cool to walk into the store and see, like, half of an entire wall be like the same uniform cover design. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, yeah. We should probably talk about Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Let's start with talking about the covers, though, like the actual Hawkeye covers.
Okay.
Because I want to say a thing about the original ones. Like, I think the non-variants are the ones with him in purple and there's designs around him, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay. So those came across to me very, like, cool 60s mod, like, almost James Bond. And he references, like, you know, I'm just trying to pretend to be James Bond. But at the same time, every time I looked at one, I felt like it should be, like, some sexy spy lady in that pose and not Hawkeye. I like the covers. It just felt a little off. What did you guys think of them?
I really liked them, especially number two. The one that Andy brought up earlier where it was like kind of an instructional infographic about how to fire a bow. I thought that was the coolest one. I just, you know, it's a neat kind of graphic design thing instead of a typical comic book cover. I think that's true for this whole five issues we read. These are very atypical designs for comic book covers. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I like them all.
I think the key phrase there is graphic design, and I really like these covers because they incorporate that aesthetic that typically I want to say Swiss kind of design, the minimalism to them, because so much of covers for comic books is outlandish and over the top. You know, like earlier I said, Bane riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
You know, do you remember the new 50? I don't think any of you probably bought this comic, but the Catwoman number one from New 52.
Oh God!
Yes. Where she's like, that's
with the spine that can't possibly really bad. Exist.
Yeah, that's the one of the examples of outlandish comic book covers that sold a lot of comics.
And I just mean, like, even if there's a foreground, it's like Spider-Man reaching up from a grave and there's this big tombstone and in the back there's a storm in the park and this, and it's, even if it's beautifully drawn, it's so busy with the eye. And I know that you can fix that. A good artist draws the eye towards the subject, and the art and the frame is built in a way that emphasis is placed on one place, and that's what makes it foreground versus background. Or if the background's the emphasis and the foreground isn't, you know, there's a way to do that in art. But in terms of graphic design, it's all about minimalism. You only show what you need to show to get the point across. And I like that this art is an intersection between those two. You know, we get a lot of great art with the backgrounds, with them. One of my favorite examples of what I'm talking about is the frame where I think they're in, what's the name of the fictional city? Mandipur? Is that what it's called?
Mandipur,
that's right. Madripoor, yes, that was the name of it. I like, there's a frame in there where it's like, he's in silhouette, just black, and the background is all, like, the buildings lit up. And it's him with the bow drawn. That panel is friggin' perfect. That's a perfect intersection of art and design where you clutter up the background with the art that you need, right? That's showing you the brightness of the city. It gives you a great feel, a great vibe, but it places emphasis on Clint Barton through lack of visual. Like, it's such a design thing to do overlaid over comic book art. It's an awesome intersection of the two kinds of art, and I think it works so well in this comic. So there. Is there what okay, so I guess we're just going to go headlong into the art. Is there any scenes that you guys liked as much?
A specific scene. Let me think.
Or framework. I know also in issue 2 the other thing I really liked was the framework as he's drawing the bow to shoot the three arrows at once.
Mm-hmm.
And it had like it did letter by letter between the frames and the gutters, like as he's drawing it, it's her talking. It was paced awesome.
Yeah, I really like that scene as well.
Or he's saying her name, right? It wasn't it Kate who was drawing her bow, and he's talking about how skilled she is, and he goes Kate, and it spells out. Oh, that was a second one. No, okay. No, there's two instances like this, right?
Yes, I think so.
So it looks like okay. It's page. Like 5 of issue. Which issue am I looking at? Blah blah blah. Of issue 2. And so yeah, Kate is talking to Hawkeye as he's shooting, and he's talking about slowing your breathing and stuff. And it says, "Well, that's cool," but it's, you know,
it's drawn out because it's sort of showing, as he's slowing down. I love that.
And it's like it's a little picture of Kate as she's pronouncing each letter. There's even one for the apostrophe of that.
Okay, maybe I'm like conflating two separate things.
Maybe. So okay, did you guys have anything in the art that really stuck out for you?
Yeah, actually. So the scene where he and Kate infiltrate the evil circus.
Yes.
One of the very... not the scene, the issue. One of the very early pages in that shows... You know how he starts every issue saying, like, this is bad?
I know this looks bad.
It shows him and Kate falling into a swimming pool. And there's gunshots coming down from above, and there's just these two people in the pool, and like you can see the blood spatter as they're being shot. And for some reason that little detail really caught my eye and was like, this is going to be a darker Hawkeye. This is going to be like there's innocent bystanders who get hurt, and it's just kind of like this reality that's there in the background. It's never actually addressed, and yet it's still this important detail that the artist actually has you focus on. So it kind of just gave this cool tone. And they're unidentified people. They're just black silhouettes. I just really like that. Sorry, I keep interrupting you.
No, I think aside from showing collateral damage or friendly fire, whatever you want to call it, I think it's important to, before he gets out the trick arrows, like the boomerang arrow, because it always comes back and it's cool, like, he's still shooting people with arrows. There's non-lethal ways to shoot somebody, sure, but you're still friggin' shooting people. Like, there's violence in this. A lot more than just, like, the superficial punching that happens in a lot of Cape comics. This is, he's shooting motherfuckers, and he's breaking their skin, and they are going to bleed, and they might be injured for life. And I like the subtle cues in the art that hint toward that. What about you, David?
I just like the art style in general. I can't really think of a specific scene, but especially issues like, well, okay, I was flipping through and I found one. I was going to say especially issues 4 and 5 where he's in Madripoor, but there's the one where he gets, the part where he's, you know, where he's tied to a chair and they throw him into his bedroom.
Ah, yeah.
And there's the hand ninjas coming out of the shadows. What I love is, and this kind of leads into my next point, I love the use of black in this whole comic.
Yeah.
There's no, particularly in this scene with the ninjas, there's no, like, break between the ninjas and the shadow. They're like, it's like they're part of it. They're coming out of it, especially the guy coming out from under the bed and the dude coming out of the closet or the bathroom, whatever it is. They're both just part of the darkness. And there's no break between them to separate. This is the ninja and this is the shadow. And this use of black is it's like all over the comic. You mentioned it, Andy, earlier, the part where he's silhouetted against the city is another great use of it. And the circus issues have it too. So, you know, the use of shadow and heavy, it's not even like purple. Sometimes they use purple too, but it's like sometimes, you know, for to show darkness. But this one in particular, like David Asia's use of black is really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and the use of purple is really, really prominent. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Really prominent, especially during the circus issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything's just purple and black and white, and it works so well. It's such a cool vibe out of this, and I think it relates a lot to what Jen said earlier about how he's just doing his best James Bond impression.
And I think the art style really lends itself to, you know what it reminds me of? I've been trying to think, what does this art remind me of? And it reminds me of the original Johnny Quest cartoons. I feel like this doesn't feel so much like a superhero comic as an adventure comic. And the scene that really like made me think of that is after Hawkeye rescues Kate from Madame Mask in the casino, and the two of them kick the door down together.
Yes.
That's just like awesome. There's all these confused bad guys behind them and they're like karate kicking the door down. It just seems like such an adventure more than superheroes battling it out on some level that humans can't possibly fathom, you know?
Yeah, even though he tries to convince you so many times, he's just a dude with a bow.
He is just a dude with a bow, but he's an awesome dude with a bow.
Yeah.
I'm going to contest that and put the point out that these 7 issues are all a chronicling of Hawkeye's failures. These are like all Hawkeye being a fuck-up.
Well, yes, but like, he gets it done in the end, right? And he is like Indiana Jones, he fucks up all the time, but somehow he ends up saving the day. But we don't think of Indiana Jones as a fuck-up.
I kind of do, but...
Yeah, but see, in the end, they save the day, and Hawkeye and Kate save the day at the end.
I think part of it, too, is, like, Indiana Jones, you see his fallibility and his humanity and that he gets a little beat up by Nazis. But Hawkeye gets put in the hospital for a while. You know, he's definitely far more delicate than your average action hero. And that could be a good trait, but It's not, like, bad that he's a screw-up, but it seems like it's meant to be a little more comedic in this.
Okay. Have you seen Die Hard? You guys have seen Die Hard, yeah. Right? He's just like John McClane. They both get their foot cut. They walk around with no shoes on. They're in these high-rise buildings. And somehow, they get hurt a lot. John McClane is messed up at the end of Die Hard 1. But you know what? He saved the day still. And so I think Clint Barton is a good action hero.
I think Jen's point is more pronounced when you contrast Clint Barton to Kate Bishop. Kate Bishop seems like she's better at being Hawkeye than Hawkeye.
Well, yeah, but
well,
like
I don't know though, because maybe she's more level-headed or more cool or fucks up less. But at the same time, I don't think she's as good of an archer.
But like, I think Hawkeye Clint is kind of dopey, you know. Whereas, like you said, Andy, Kate is the more level-headed, pragmatic person. I think what causes Hawkeye to get into bad situations is that he's really confident. He's got that Avengers swagger.
Yeah, and he has the skill to back it up too. He's a really damn good archer.
But he's not that good at everything else.
Yes.
I mean, he's pretty good. He's a pretty decent S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and stuff. I think if it was a regular S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, then it would be a similar type of situation. Like, I don't think they would do any better than Clint. But he gets it done, and he's like a dopey hero, and Kate is like almost his sidekick that keeps him from hurting himself too much. Maybe he's more like Inspector Gadget.
Oh no.
And she's Penny.
Oh no. That's no good right there.
And Madame Mask is the Claw.
Yeah, Madame Mask is Dr. Claw. I don't know. I just feel like he's kind of an amalgamation of action heroes and less of a superhero type of thing. And I think that's perfectly fine. You know, yeah. I love action movies like Die Hard and things like that. So it's and Indiana Jones. So it's okay that he is the way he is.
I see where you're coming from, Jen, but I'm less inclined to call him a failure and a fuck up as much as I am to call him, I don't want to say stupid, but but a little dumb, actually, apparently.
I feel like my name for him, Dopey, is a good choice.
Yeah, which is, but he has the skill to back it up, and like you say, he has the swagger and the confidence that maybe Kate's not missing any swagger. Kate's got a lot more swagger than Clint does. But I like the dynamic between the two, that they make up for what the other one doesn't have. Kate is smarter. Kate is more, as you say, pragmatic. But Clint has the skill to back up whatever situation he fucking gets himself into.
He's kind of – they're kind of like another – I keep comparing them to different duos. But they also remind me of Han Solo and Princess Leia.
Yeah.
In the way they like – no, not that they're in a relationship. He doesn't know that she loves him.
Yeah, but you know they're shipping that all over the place.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, they're kind of... He's kind of dumb, but he is also... He's got swagger like Han Solo does. I keep using swagger. I feel like I'm some kind of internet bro. But I just feel like they could be compared to lots of different duos. I guess someone to pick, because that's very... polarizing.
Yeah. I don't know. And I know you, I don't know if you meant to call Kate his sidekick earlier.
No, she isn't his sidekick, okay. But in this instance, they're kind of like that, in that she pulls him out of the fire kind of thing. You know, she couldn't get it done without him.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think of them quite a bit as partners. But I think what really makes this comic work in terms of character is also mood. And I think that's what Matt Fraction does really, 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 really good in this comic, is have mood and tone and have this consistent feeling through all five of these issues. Like we pointed out earlier, how every issue starts with, I know this looks bad, but, you know. And then I love the feel, the vibe, the authentic wrongness of the tracksuit gang saying bro all the time. Like, that just, that feeling of tone is what makes this comic work so awesome.
Yeah, totally. I think the bro gang is pretty funny.
It's just
like little things like that that make this a good comic. This is one of those comics where the details are really what make it such a great story.
Point in case, the censorship with like the little Silver Age Hawkeye logo.
Yes,
over that was his junk. That was a high point, I think.
Was that your favorite part, Jen?
Yes.
I really loved after that, though, when Kate picks him up. And there's those, like, six panels when he first gets into the bug. And he's like, go, go, go!
She's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, when I say he's, like, a fuck-up and a failure, I don't mean that in the, like, I'm condemning you and judging you way.
No,
More like, yeah. He's not unlovable. He's not a loser, but he's not always the most successful in his endeavors.
No, he's definitely more of a lovable loser.
Just like Han Solo in Indiana Jones.
Hey, Han Solo is not a loser, my friend. He might be a scoundrel and a nerf herder.
I don't know.
But he is not scruffy looking.
What kind of non-loser drops his halo at the first sign of Imperial trouble, Andy?
Yeah.
Anyways.
So do you guys, I don't know, I keep trying to make you guys pick out a favorite scene, but I guess there's just too many of them to pick from. The other one that I really like, talking about mood and vibe and how he makes it work, so my favorite line, this is the other thing that makes the mood work, is all the awesome one-liners in here between Kate and Clint. My favorite is when Clint is like, do you know how to drive a boat? And they're like, do you even drive a boat? You don't sail a boat or whatever? And then, like, the next page, they're on the boat, and Clint's just, like, grinning and, like, yelling, I'm great at boats! And then just imagines that perfect, like, I don't know how to do this. Let's fire it up and get going and let's see. And I just imagine him being out on the water, just getting all cocky with the fact that he learned how to get it going. And saying, I'm great at boats, and not being able to contain it, and having to shout it to the world.
Well, do you remember in the last issue, too, he's evacuating his neighbor Grills from, like, his dad's house, and his dad's like, yeah, I have a rowboat in the attic, and he goes, let's get it, I'm great at boats. Maybe he's actually really good at boats.
I forgot all about that.
And then the other one-liner that keeps happening is, my car!
Yeah,
it was a sweet car, but
yeah, hell yeah.
Like, I didn't think he got it in the end, because wasn't the mob wife basically like, I'm not gonna sell my car to some crazy like you?
Yeah,
but then it shows up later, so I don't know, plot hole.
Maybe they're not willing to try and get it back from an Avenger.
Because he'll kill you.
or maybe he just said fuck it and bought it anyway, like he did the building.
Could be.
Like, he might be a fuck up, but he is a classy guy. I like how he takes care of the dog. I like the building. He's a classy dude.
Well, see, this is where he's actually kind of like a screw up a little, because he buys the building to save everyone from getting evicted. But then he's, you know, they come to his door and they're like, yeah, you're the superintendent now. Gotta fix stuff. And he's like, what? So, and I mean, he's shooting arrows into their satellite dishes and all sorts of crap. So, I don't know, it's kind of that he's not a loser, he was a good guy and bought the building, but he also didn't realize how much, like, responsibility he had with it. So.
Yeah, I think what makes him that lovable loser kind of thing is that he doesn't think his decisions through. He sees the right choice, and he just makes it. And whatever happens after that, happens after that. But he sees the right choice, and he just does it. Sort of like when he takes the dog into the vet, he just plops the dog on the table and says, fix my dog. Or fix the dog, right? And then when the vet comes up and talks to him, he gets angry. He's like, it's not my dog. You know, like, there's this frustration. Like, he doesn't know what, how to handle that social situation. He didn't think out what was going to happen once he took the dog to the vet. He didn't think any of that through, but the decision was right. And I think it's the same with the building. Like, he didn't think through the building. He's just like, well, I don't want all my friends to get kicked out. I like hanging out up here on the roof with Grill. I'll buy the building, whatevs. And then it's like, oh no, you have to do shit when you own the building. You can't just own it and expect everybody to be happy.
It's a step in the right direction.
So what do you guys think about the whole tape storyline with Madame Mask and everything?
That was my favorite two issues of this.
I felt like it was a goofy excuse to have Kate fondle his nuts. Like, the whole storyline?
I don't think that's where he was hiding the black card.
See, and this is how shipping begins, right here.
Either way, there was, like, some creepy digging around that was very personal, so.
I think it was supposed to be in his butt, Jen.
Okay, well, wherever it was very... It was not somewhere I'd want to have to search.
Well, he didn't know it was Kate.
Thank you for laying that out there, David.
He thought Madame Mask was putting her hand in his butt.
Yeah, he didn't know. I mean, the only one here that needs to be weirded out is her.
You know what's weird? Hiding a credit card in your privates. Because you know what? What happens when you're like, okay, now I gotta use the card? You walk over and you're like, oh, yeah, pardon me a sec, let me go get it. And you have to go fish it out. Like, well, really?
You're only using the card for one thing, and all you have to do is excuse yourself.
And like, think say, about
oh, who, I have to go get my money, and then I'll be back.
And think about who he's going to hand the card to once he gets it out. He's going to hand it to bad guys. They deserve it.
Have you guys watched... Oh, is it...
It's Mallrats.
Mallrats, yeah. Stink Bomb.
Yes, it's Mallrats. He's basically stink-palming Kingpin or whoever's going to swipe the card.
Yeah, it's... Oh, man. Ew.
But instead, he ends up doing it to Kate.
Well, she's got gloves on, so yeah. It turns out to be okay.
I like how she didn't ever let on that it was not Madame Mask, but rather Kate. She's just like, I'm going to go for this all the way.
I mean, you have to. I mean you're surrounded by, like, the worst of the worst.
Yeah, she can't even let Clint know because he might act out of character and try to save her or something if he knew.
Clint totally would act out of character.
Yeah.
He would fuck it up.
She just knows him so well, Jen.
So ridiculous. Either way, it was a poor excuse to reach into a man's butt.
The only last thing I'm going to bring up artificially for discussion, as in there's not a natural segue to it, is in the text, I love what Matt Fraction did for foreign languages. How he, like, put in brackets. He didn't, like, write out the translation for whatever language they were supposed to be speaking. Right? Like, he wrote a generic slang word.
Yeah.
Slang for male genitalia. Demeaning slang.
It's pretty funny. I think that was clever.
Yeah. I mean, it's how an average person kind of interprets it. You walk around, you're like, oh, sounds like Chinese. Oh, maybe it's, you know, Korean.
Yeah, like, when they're at the circus, and he says, sounds like French. Maybe a little bit of Italian, too? I don't know. But I like that a lot also because it maintains your sense of perspective around Clint Barton. And that This is the way that Clint Barton interacts with the world. Clint Barton doesn't know French and Italian and Chinese and Russian. Like, it putting it in there kind of breaks that sense of narrative being centered around Clint Barton. I almost said Chris Barton. Centered around Clint Barton. Like, to put in all those different languages breaks that, and to leave it like this, like, fits his character so much. Because from, I think it's, like, the second page, he says Paleolithic. I had to look that up. Like, you get that sense of the person from that.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah, because they easily could have gone with you know, he's a super shield, super spy guy who knows all the languages, but it would have been unrealistic. And I think they're trying to make Clint kind of normal. So, yeah, it totally fits the character that's established in this comic. Because I don't think he is like Clint from the Avengers movie, you know, who's like a hard-ass military guy.
No, this is not that Clint Barton at all. Thank goodness, too, because that's what I was afraid of. Because I don't know about you guys, for some reason, that Hawkeye got really popular after the movie, but I thought he was boring as fuck.
Yep.
I didn't care for Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye either. It's, I don't know.
I think Jeremy Renner is a fine actor. I think that that he just wasn't an interesting character in the movie.
Yeah.
I think if you make a Hawkeye based around these comics, Jeremy Renner could play that. Like, yeah, the problem is not Renner. The problem is that it was a boring-ass character, and the most interesting thing that happened to him in the movie was that he was related to Black Widow somehow, and they had some past that you didn't quite know about, because Black Widow actually gave a fuck about. Clint Barton, not so much. But anyway.
Well, he was, like, mind-controlled, too.
Yeah, but even then...
It wasn't that interesting. Like, Black Widow's reaction was probably the more interesting factor of that.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, I've read a lot of comics with Hawkeye in them, like Avengers stuff. I've never read a Hawkeye individual series, and I like Hawkeye in the comics for the most part, but I think this is the best interpretation of him that I've seen.
That's actually something I was going to bring up, but I forgot to put in the notes, so thank you for reminding me. Is this at all... This Hawkeye seems interesting to me. Every other time I've seen Hawkeye before, I've been utterly bored by him. Is this abnormal for what Hawkeye is, or
he mentions in here that he dressed as a ninja for a while.
Yeah.
So like when I first started reading Avengers in earnest, it was during his ninja period. It was during Secret Invasion.
Okay.
And he wasn't like the movie Hawkeye. He wasn't boring, but he wasn't as cool as this Hawkeye. And as time progressed, and he went back to being Hawkeye. And he was not Ronin anymore. And he became more interesting, especially in the issues where he interacts with Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
Who Mockingbird is a character who was in West Coast Avengers with him. I didn't read any of the West Coast Avengers, but they were married at one point. And then they think she dies, but it was a Skrull. And then she comes back, Secret Invasion kind of thing. You know how they do.
Yeah.
And there was a run called Hawkeye and Mockingbird. I don't remember how long it lasted, but I bought the first few issues. And I thought it was a pretty good comic. It was kind of like this, where it was more of a spy thing, because she doesn't have superpowers either.
Mm-hmm.
And she was part of this spy organization, and he wanted to be friends with her still. And so, or like have some kind of relationship, and it wasn't really working out. But it was like an interesting thing. And then after that, in the Avengers, he got into a relationship with Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew. And that was pretty interesting. He's kind of like the man-whore of the Avengers, is what I'm getting at.
That's what I'm sensing here.
But he's pretty interesting. And he's especially in the most recent stuff, the most recent of Bendis' Avengers, he's pretty interesting. I think he's more like this Hawkeye than the movie Hawkeye. So what I guess I'm saying is, if you want to read more about Hawkeye, you should probably look at the most recent Bendis Avengers stuff.
Okay. Because that was my other thing.
From my experience, I haven't read any Hawkeye solo titles before this one, but I was kind of one of those people who had you said that Hawkeye became really popular after the movie, which is true, but I was kind of one of those people that kind of had some irrational dislike of him.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason I liked Oliver Queen, Green Arrow. I don't understand what it is. But now I like him a lot. Even before I read this, I liked him as part of the Avengers.
Yeah, I think I like him more because reading this comic makes me realize that I don't really like Oliver Queen. Like, I thought I did, but now I read this and I'm like, man, Ollie could be so much cooler, but instead he's just like grumpy and mean and lame, and I don't really want to read Green Arrow anymore.
I like Green Arrow a lot still. Do you guys watch the Arrow show? I like Aaron.
That show got real bad real fast.
Oh.
Well, I like it still.
Sorry, David.
You don't have to apologize. I'm going to watch it anyway. Right. It's very angsty.
So the only other thing that I think might be needing to be brought up, because apparently it's something that happens all over the internet that people bring up with this comic, is the female gaze that's in here. Like, most comics are... Alright. Okay, I'm going to... Feminism, okay? It says a lot of things about, like, the male gaze, right? That when there's a female depiction of a character, that the depiction is based upon the gaze of the male upon the female character as an object, right? And that a prime example of this is most cape comics. No matter how badass you make a female character, she will still be subject to the male gaze. Examples given would be She-Hulk and Power Girl and Batwoman. No matter how powerful they may be, they're subjects of the male gaze, right? And that this comic, a lot of people say, turns that on its head and makes Hawkeye the subject of the female gaze. Do either of you have something to say upon this? I just thought it was worth mentioning at the very least.
Okay, so this is a comic that I'm not, or not comic, a concept that I'm not really familiar with. I just Googled it really quickly. Can you, like, explain a little bit what you mean by the male and female gaze?
Just the male gaze looking upon the female as an object to behold, to possess, to own. The feeling of I want that.
Okay.
Can I elaborate a little?
Yes, please save me.
Okay, the female gaze also involves this general idea that what you're doing is looking at the world through a patriarchal view, not chauvinistic, but patriarchal, in that the male is the one dominant, the one with the power, the one who controls most aspects of culture, society. So, for instance, we in Superman might see the male gaze, or Batman, because if you look at Batman or Superman, and this is just a good example in terms of a male character, they are also in a way to be coveted because they have what could be termed the perfect male bodies with all the musculature.
With the 8-pack.
Yeah, all that shit. And then they are always saving the day. They're always empowered and they maintain this sense of humanity because they're heroes, but they're also very idealized. Batman in a cold, cool, calm way, and Superman in a friendly, homey, everyman sort of way. So they're kind of male hero examples of the male gaze, whereas the female gaze would be something characterized by I guess you could say, like, almost matriarchal point of view, not just women wanting Hawkeye, because women are supposed to want Nightwing or Batman or Superman because he's super masculine, but also Hawkeye kind of featuring traits that aren't so focused on what society has deemed like attractive, not just in terms of the visual but also the emotional.
I would say a gross oversimplification of the idea would be that the writer and the artist of a comic book have the understood assumption that the reader will be male. And that Hawkeye doesn't necessarily turn it on its head, but at least throws that idea away. So sort of the assumption that your reader's going to be a dude, so let's write a comic book for dudes.
Okay.
Is that too much of an oversimplification, Jen?
No, that was actually, like, really good.
All right.
I think it made more sense than what I said.
Well, no, you gave the really good, like, detailed explanation, and I gave the Star Trek. Just think of it like a carburetor. My favorite episode of Voyager. So, yeah, do you guys have anything to say about this idea of this comic sort of foregoing the male gaze?
I don't think I could say anything intelligent about it since I've just been introduced to this concept. So take it away, Jen.
Oh, no. I didn't do my background research because I feel like I would have read it with an eye for that if I had actually, known that argument at the time.
I mean, my background research comes from Tumblr. You don't got to be.
Are you talking about the Hawkeye Initiative thing?
Oh, when they draw him as in female poses?
Yeah.
I think that's an exacerbation of this idea, but yeah, kind of that.
For those of you who don't know, Hawkeye Initiative is taking ridiculous female poses, like, for instance, Catwoman, I think it is issue one, right?
Yeah.
Where the woman is put in an over-sexualized position, and then putting Hawkeye in that position instead to show how stupid it is, and just because... Okay, I don't understand it, but since the Avengers movie, like, the female portion of the internet has been unduly in love with Hawkeye, and I'm not buying it. Of course, that's not.
Should be Thor, really, right?
But should be, like, I don't know. Like, I can't pick an Avenger.
Thor, it's
should
Thor.
Be Batman.
Thor.
So, you know, I wouldn't say female gaze. I would say that this comic came off as a lot more gender neutral in terms of maybe target audience. I'm not sure that I could necessarily say this was written with a more female audience or perspective in mind. I'm not even sure what would define that.
See, but that's, I think, good. I think that's progress. The fact that you can read this comic and say this isn't obviously marketed to dudes. I don't think we can say that about Court of Owls. I think Court of Owls is very much marketed, written directly for dudes. I mean, there's almost nothing in it but dudes. I can't think of a single female character in Court of Owls other than the old woman in the wheelchair who says, "Send out all the Talons." Like, that's it. That's the only female character I can remember from that entire comic. I mean, so that one, I mean, for the one sense, that is written. I mean, you could, if you sit there and think about it, it's written for guys. And this one, I think that if you can say that, you can't tell if it's written for one or written for the other. I think that's progress, and I think it's worth bringing up and mentioning.
Oh, and certainly.
I think one of the great scenes for that is the one that I pointed out earlier, not only because it's comedic, I guess, when Kate picks up Clint and is like, "Really? With the abs and everything?" And he's like, "Go, go, 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 get them. Chase my car down." And I think the dynamic between the two really helps emphasize. I mean, the fact that they are so equal and trade off in these different ways. Like, you can call Clint Barton stupid, maybe, but he's not as... You might say he's not as smart as Kate, but Kate's not as skilled as Clint. Like, they both have their strengths, and they're on equal footing. And I like that it's done that way when they do the gimmick of, like, the doctor, 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 doctor kind of gimmick when they call each other Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that they do it in the comic, that they talk to each other as equals, that kind of way.
I think that's what exemplifies it, though. I mean, Hawkeye the hero from this is not male. Hawkeye is a dude and a lady.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes Hawkeye, by definition, gender neutral as a hero. I mean, obviously Clint is a guy and Kate is a lady, but if they're both Hawkeye, then it's not going to necessarily be focused on one or the other. And it's not necessarily even it doesn't at this point seem like a mentor-teacher relationship. At one point he says, "She's my ward," but you can tell she is fully capable. So that's probably the stem of that argument. I don't know. I need to read up on this more.
Yeah. I mean, the nearest thing I have for comparison is, in terms of the balance between characters like this, is Green Arrow. Green Arrow takes a female sidekick in, and that sidekick is never as good as he is in any way. Never. And it's like, okay, well, that's not as good as this, I think. But anyway, do you guys have anything else you want to bring up before we rate this?
No.
Okay. Well, then, how about you go first, David?
Okay, I'm going to give this a 4. I'm probably giving it a 4 because I really like Matt Fraction. But I think this was a really good, it was a really good comic. It's one of those comics where I can truly say I had a lot of fun reading it.
Hell.
it didn't take itself too seriously. The story was really good. The storytelling was excellent. The art was beautiful, I felt. You know, it, and the taking cues from graphic design was really cool. It's something I hadn't really seen before in comics, so I already forgot what score I gave it. What did I say?
You gave it a 4.
Okay, yeah. 4. Definitely 4. So, yeah, I think this is a really good comic. If you like Hawkeye or wanna or haven't had a good experience with Hawkeye yet, then you should read this comic. So, yeah, 4. Solid all 4.
Right. How about you, Jen?
I think I'm going to be like the upset vote in this. Because I didn't actually even say anything really much about it during the podcast, but I found it to be really bland. And I do not see myself reading more of this. It was okay as I was reading it, and I wasn't like, when is this going to be over? But it just was like, it was okay, and maybe a little, I don't think I'm going to remember this in a month, much less a year. So, average. It felt so average. The art was nice, but we've seen nice art elsewhere. The story was funny, the characters were good, but we've gotten that elsewhere, and it just, I don't know, maybe we've been reading better comics lately, and it's not like I'm comparing this to Spawn or something, but it just, 2.5 average.
Okay. Oh, man. Fuck, Jen, I wish I would have made you talk more earlier, because that's an awesome fucking point. Not like, it's bland is an awesome point, but, like, I'm sitting here thinking about the downside of this comic, because I realized when I was done reading it, I enjoyed reading it so much, because, like David said, it was so much just fun to read. It covered up any deficiencies, I think. But now that you mention it, there is a certain lack of depth of character here. No, not even that. It's just, I don't know that we see Clint Barton grow. I don't know that we see Kate grow. I don't know that we see them change. They make the same mistakes over and over. They have the same banter, and it's always fun. It's reliably fun and interesting, but I don't know that we see them change. Fuck, I was like ready to go give it a 4.5. But now that you mentioned it, I think, you know, I still am going to give it a 4.5. Because if we want to compare comics to movies, right, because that's what I'm about to do, so I'm going to say that that's what we're going to do, I want to compare this to something like Ocean's 11. Super stylized, very, very slick, has a cool feel. You feel cooler when you're watching it. It's a really, really fun movie. There's maybe one character out of the 11 in there that have any kind of development or arc beyond the superficial. Really, the movie is just a bunch of stylized, fun action. That's like all it is. And this comic is a lot of really good, really stylized, fun action. The art, the tone, the writing, everything works to make you feel this vibe that just is cool. And just reading this comic is cool. And reading this comic makes you feel cool. And maybe it's not a great comic, but you feel cool when you read it. And I want to give it a 4.5 because that sense of vibe, feeling, whatever you want to say, is difficult to achieve reliably. And each of these 5 issues maintains that sense of cool vibe. And even though it's Matt Fraction, and we know Matt Fraction is a good writer, and he's very, very good at doing that, like, each of his stories has a different feel, but I think that's what's important, is that each of them has a distinct feel. I don't think I can remember something written by Matt Fraction that feels like this, you know? Whereas if we read, say, when we did the 3 issues by Gail Simone, Gail Simone feels like Gail Simone feels like Gail Simone, right? You know, most of our arcs, the guy feels like the guy feels like the guy. The writer feels like the writer feels like the writer. Matt Fraction, you can know that it's Matt Fraction because the comic you're reading has this really distinct tone and feel. But man, this feels way different from the Iron Man Matt Fraction that we read. Like, feels way different. And they were both awesome. And I think that that ability to switch from one to the other as a writer deserves a lot of merit. And I'm going to stick with a 4.5 just because if this feels like Ocean's 11 in a comic book, that's fine because I fucking love Ocean's 11. I think it's one of my favorite movies just because it's so much fun.
And I will add that a little bit by saying, if you like the style of this comic and you like Matt Fraction, you should check out the Future Foundation or FF comic that he's working on right now. It's similar to this in the tone and stuff. And the art is not, I can't remember who the artist is on that, but it has the same kind of vibe to it. And if you want more of an Iron Man-y type thing, check out Fantastic Four. He writes both Fantastic Four and Future Foundation, and they're both pretty good. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to say fuck it. I see what you're saying, Jen, calling it bland, and maybe it's because we didn't talk about it enough, but, like, I can totally get where a person could read this and have that kind of feeling like, I won't remember this in a month. And maybe I won't remember it a month, but I think the immediate experience of reading this was so much fun for me, and especially considering, oh God, how good the art is. I mean, I work with graphic designers, and I really appreciate the intersection of comic art and design. I think it's friggin' awesome, and I'm going to bring these comics into my employees to look at because I think it's cool, and I think that they'll appreciate it. But just all of these things, just the immediacy of the experience of reading this comic was so good for me that I want to give it a 4.5. And I entirely believe what you say, Jen. In a month, I will probably have forgotten almost every single panel of this. But tonight, it feels like great. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 and say, damn the consequences that happened in a month. So I guess that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to wrap up our series Best of 2012 with Underwater Welder. This one's a graphic novel from last year, of course. Written by Jeff Lemire, who also did the art. I have no fucking clue what this comic is going to be about. I wish I could teaser you, but all I know is I went to a bunch of different sites looking for articles about the quote-unquote best comics of 2012, and this came up on every single one. I went to 10 websites, and literally every single website had this comic on it. I've never fucking heard of it. I have no idea what it is. Might be because I don't go to comic book stores as much anymore, and I pretty much just shop through Amazon. But I got no clue, but I'm so looking forward to it. Because if it's on all freaking 10 of these, if everybody says it's great, I mean, I'm excited to try it. So that's next week. If you need more information about what's coming up in the future, we got the next series after that already planned out. And we're going to start brainstorming the one after that, too. So if you want to know what's coming up a month out, once we've already forgotten Hawkeye, you can go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. You can also email us directly and give us suggestions for shows that you want to listen to at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or if you think you've got a really fucking good idea and you're just blown away that after 121 issues we haven't even thought of it or come near it, and you want to share with the world how awesome that idea is, you can post it up on our social media sites, which are Facebook.com/APSupercast or Twitter.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.